Welcome to Federal Insights for July, Network Transformation and Modernization, sponsored by Hughes Networks.
Hello there, and welcome to today's episode of Federal Insights. I'm Eric White. That big enterprise infrastructure solutions set of contracts, EIS for short, has the potential to bring agencies the technologies and services they need for real network transformation and IT modernization. Agencies are under pressure because deadlines are in place to transition from existing telecommunications services contracts of the expiring networks program. To find out more about how some agencies are coming along, Federal News Network's Jason Miller had the chance to talk to Steve Hernandez, Chief Information Security Officer and Director of Information Assurance Services at the Department of Education, as well as Jeff Flick, the Director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He spoke with them at a recent ACT-IAC event.
We, you know, with having well over 2,200 locations around the country, 18 months to transition the balance of our services is going to be quite a challenge. So we'll be looking at most likely, you know, looking at some of the mitigation strategies GSA has published in the past. But, you know, we're going to work at this. It's a great opportunity to modernize so many of the different architectures that have landed and evolved within the organization over the last couple of decades. And I know that the National Weather Service and each of the individual program offices are really focused on bringing those technologies and those architectures into much more viable and maintainable environment.
So when you talk about bringing those into a more viable environment, let's talk through that a little bit. What does that mean for NOAA? You heard Alan mention as a service. Is that part of the viability that you're talking about? Or are you talking about viability in a different way?
No, absolutely. You know, we want the missions to focus on the mission and not necessarily those types of services that can be, I don't want to say easily provided, but provided by other groups, you know, not to distract from the mission and, you know, enable the funding, right? You know, if we can provide a more capability for the same funding or less funding today, then that's enabling, that's putting that money back inside the mission.
And one of the things that comes up time and again when we talk about EIS is, how are you modernizing, right? A lot of times, you know, when I talk to vendors, oh, I see a lot of like for like, or modernization is going to come down later on, you know, 6 months, a year, 5 years from now. Where is NOAA at on that journey? How are you starting to look at EIS or using EIS to modernize your networks?
So it's going to be a hybrid environment. You know, it's not going to be a pure, we're going to jump into the newest technology. A lot of the programs require other appropriations to modernize the other end devices, the sensors and various components. So we'll be working with those. We'll transition off of the legacy TDM infrastructure as we can, especially those systems that are being shut down, the discontinuation of certain services, the TDM services that's rolling out across the country today. You know, we're focused on making sure that we support that transition into other technologies. Those that do have to transfer like for like today will be transitioned into service-based infrastructure as best we can as we move this forward. You know, this is this mission that we've had for so many, you know, so many years is dependent on certain architectures. And that takes a long time for the appropriations and the, you know, the science to also evolve.
Steve, from education, let's talk a little bit about zero trust, because one of the pieces of EIS, as we talk through it, the goal here is to start to move in that direction. I saw, as they're doing some research, a little bit of surveys that have been done over the last couple of years that a lot of agencies say we have at least one piece of the zero trust architecture in place. EIS is a key piece to getting more of the zero trust architecture in place. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with zero trust and how it relates to EIS.
Yeah, fantastic conversation. And at the Department of Ed, for us, it's really about that agility that Alan was talking about. And from my perspective as the CISO, it's all about risk visibility and how much visibility can I get and how close can I get that to near real time. With zero trust, and when we look at the ACT-IAC white paper on zero trust, especially, you know, there's four big pieces to this that we have to get right. Data, both do we know what we have and can we collect data around what's happening? ICAM, identity, absolutely fundamental. The trust engine, leveraging technologies like AI and machine learning. But then that last piece, the control fabric, that is squarely where EIS fits into our discussion around zero trust architectures. And so much of the conversation is, hey, why zero trust? Why now? You know, arguably this has been around since the 80s in some way, shape, or form. And other people have called it ICAM done right, which is absolutely correct. Why now? And it's a lot of these great leading edge technologies that Alan mentioned, for example, software-defined perimeter, software-defined networking, the ability to change your networking fabric, layer three and up, on the fly as needed. Things that that trust engine can then dive in and influence without the need for human intervention. And of course, that immediate reporting back, which is what I'm looking for, that risk visibility. EIS serves as one of the primary conduits to get that capability in our department quickly, securely, and frankly, at a great price point. So we're very excited to move forward in this space.
Now, I know EIS isn't necessarily your bailiwick, right? I'm sure you have a transition manager similar to what Jeff does at NOAA. But give me a sense of what are the conversations you're having with the folks who are looking at EIS of how to ensure zero trust is a major piece to that puzzle.
Yeah, so for us, we're looking at it as also a core component of our modernization plan. And so for us, we're a little bit interesting in that we defeated data center consolidation years ahead of most folks. Simply, that was something that was strategic to the department almost a decade ago. And so for us, we're looking at cloud connectivity and how are we interconnecting with cloud providers and how are we leveraging models like TIC 3.0 and some of these use cases to move forward. And so when we look at EIS, we look at it in terms of, one, modernization in terms of not just connecting to these cloud providers, but where can EIS also serve as a catalyst to help collapse and in places consolidate some of those services that we're getting from those cloud providers, or even act as the catalyst to consolidate the cloud providers proper. And when you start thinking about the network and where it sits in the strategic plans of an agency, it really becomes a cross-cutting amplifier because, of course, you've got the core service delivery and user experience, but then you got cybersecurity, but then you got performance and value. And with EIS, for us, we're seeing it being able to drive positive momentum in all three of those dimensions.
How does the government plan to address golden SAML attacks associated with Active Directory Federation services, which SolarWinds hackers took advantage of in the as-a-service model? Steve, let me throw that at you in a little bit. Maybe you could broaden that out about the type of attack. Now, without getting into any sensitivities around SolarWinds, maybe since you're the CISO on the panel, you can offer some insights.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple things here. The first is just from an architecture and governance perspective, we got to be so careful about those services or those devices that we allow to create accounts, period. And if your SolarWinds device was able to create SAML tokens and issue accounts, that's an interesting premise. Did it really need to? So there's some elements of least privilege here that we're definitely going to have to discuss as we look at SAML and other, not just SAML, it's any type of federated type of authentication in terms of who are we trusting those privileges to? And then arguably more importantly, how well can we monitor it? And I think that was the piece where most people, they had the missing elements. Because if we have a service that needs to be able to do that, well, so be it. The question is, when can we detect that it's no longer operating as intended? When we have non-person entities, I think that's where we're at most risk because we're not able to often combine that non-person entity with a secondary factor, so we can enable multi-factor with authentication attempts. And so that's going to be the sweet spot, is how do we reduce and limit those types of access and that type of capability, and when we do have it, we're able to monitor it, and we're able to leverage technology that's going to point out, hey, you know, all of a sudden this guy started kicking off accounts in groups that it's never done before, and this is strange, let's look into it. I think that's going to be the path forward. Long-term future, I think that a lot of us are considering, you know, SAML's been a venerable workhorse and we'll continue to use it in the future, but there are also some new technologies, especially as we look towards zero trust, that have different authentication paradigms, different ways of doing business, and especially if you advance down the ICAM path, the standard of SAML becomes just one of many approaches for authentication that an organization can take, so there's an opportunity there as well.
Steve Hernandez is Education's Chief Information Security Officer. Jeff Flick is the director of NOAA's Enterprise Network Program Office. We'll have more of their conversation with Jason Miller after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
Citizen-focused government means digital service delivery to constituents. The EIS contract replaces legacy networks with reliable, scalable, and secure broadband connections. And managed SD-WAN from Hughes allows agencies to utilize cloud-based applications with in-depth cybersecurity protections. Time is critical. Do not accept like for like. Ask your prime contractors about the Hughes managed SD-WAN solution or visit government.hughes.com.
We continue our interview with Jeff Flick, director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at NOAA, and Steve Hernandez, who is the Education Department CISO. They spoke to Federal News Network's Jason Miller at a recent ACT IACT event.
Jeff, this is specifically for you. How is your transition going and how long do you believe it will take? I imagine she is talking about EIS.
So transition is really broken into two pieces. One is transitioning off the legacy contracts, right? Because that's very specifically what we're being measured at, is taking all of those inventories to zero on the legacy contracts. Getting all the services on EIS and appropriate, you know, task orders is a different task. About 40% of NOAA's spend is already on commercial contracts, right? So we're going to be focused, once we get through the legacy contracts, we'll be moving those commercial contracts over as appropriate onto EIS task orders. So, you know, we're pushing hard for the 18-month, you know, that 2 years from now when the contracts end, to have as much as we possibly can have transitioned over to EIS, and then making sure that we have the, you know, appropriate mission, you know, risk mitigation contracts in place for anything that's lagging behind. The other commercial contracts, we'll move them over as opportunities present. But that, you know, that's in the next 2 to 3 years, because there's an opportunity there, really from I won't say a savings perspective, but cost avoidance and capacity opportunities.
Steve, how far along are you in implementing Zero Trust? Now, go ahead, Steve, tell us. Zero Trust is a journey. It's not a panacea. Give me all the good trite explanations and then tell us where you're at, really.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle, really. it certainly is a journey. And, you know, I think if we're being fair with ourselves, we'll never say, yeah, I've completely crossed the finish line. Zero Trust is done. And that's the point. The point is that we're constantly evolving. For us at the Department of Education, it's really around those four big pillars that I talked about. And for us right now, we're heavy on data. We've built a data lake over the past few years. We're working on getting all of our data in one place so I have accurate, thorough, timely information, and I can process it all across the board. Second piece we're driving hard on is maturing our ICAM implementation and making sure that not only are we solid on the people side, which is where we've spent most of our time in the past, but also here again that idea of non-person entities. And if you look at OMB Memorandum 1719, that's what we're driving towards there. Probably furthest out for us is the AI machine learning, because if we don't have these other things in place and then we don't have things like EIS and the control fabric, there's really not much for AI and machine learning to do in the trust engine. So that's more of the market research forward looking, but that's the progression. It's really get our arms around ICAM and the non-person entities, get our arms around data, get that control fabric in place, including capabilities from EIS, and then let's put the automation on optimize over all of it.
Steve, one thing occurs to me as you went through that is, as you said earlier, you had beaten the data center consolidation effort by just moving, education moved everything to kind of the as a service model already, managed services to the cloud. Does Zero Trust and the pieces and parts of Zero Trust, does that become, I'm not sure easier is the right word, but is it less complex? Is it more complex? Is it about the same than if, like someone like Jeff or Andrew's in a hybrid environment, and they will be for some time?
Yeah, I think part of the reality is we have to recognize we're always going to be in some kind of hybrid environment. And the term I heard recently is the residual data center. And I don't necessarily like the tie-in to residue, but the residual data center being, as much as we want to abstract, there's still going to be a physical component to this idea of the network. And there's still going to be an opportunity to exploit that physical component. And so there's always going to be some aspect. So even like the Department of Education, where we're 99% in the cloud. We still have this 1 or 2%, which is, no, we actually do have co-locations where we have some physical infrastructure for routing and things of that nature. But what that means is that really it's going to be about, for us, it's data access and data portability, especially along the terms of APIs. Hybrid or whole cloud or whatever else, what we're finding is in the multi-vendor antenna and where we can stand up a service overnight, how quickly can we get the information we need in the format we need, say, in our data lake for the department, so that we can then start to make sense of it in our risk portfolio.
That's Steve Hernandez, CISO for the Education Department. You also heard from Jeff Flick, Director of NOAA's Enterprise Network Program Office. They're speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller at a recent ACT-IAC event. Hear part three of the discussion after one more break. I'm Eric White.
Citizen-focused government means digital service delivery to constituents. The EIS contract replaces legacy networks with reliable, scalable, and secure broadband connections. And managed SD-WAN from Hughes allows agencies to utilize cloud-based applications with in-depth cybersecurity protections. Time is critical. Do not accept like for like. Ask your prime contractors about the Hughes Managed SD-WAN solution or visit government.hughes.com.
Now part three of our interview with Jeff Flick, Director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at NOAA, and Steve Hernandez, CISO for the Education Department. They spoke to Federal News Network's executive editor, Jason Miller, on a recent ACT-IAC panel.
Jeff, from a NOAA perspective, you made your award under EIS, but what if Bob over at Riverbed or another company wants to come to you and say, hey, I have this new widget I want to show you that would fit perfectly into EIS. How would that work for you all?
Well, there's lots of other vehicles. You know, EIS contract is in the task orders. There are options. And within Commerce, we have a process to go outside of EIS. You know, we just got to make sure that we get the right approvals and go execute.
Right. Steven, anything from your perspective?
I think they got it. And I think that, you know, there's a couple things where, one, is there something where maybe partnering or subbing with an EIS provider is the right fit? I love the discussion around the overlay and being able to talk about the service or the capability from an overlay perspective, because at the end of the day, at the department, one, we want to make sure everything's efficient and optimized and we can move forward as rapidly as possible. And what that means is that from a competitive perspective, making sure our competitive pool is broad and healthy and we're going to get great competition to get the best service and the best value. And at the same time, balancing that with the need to make sure that it's actually something we can finish. And so, you know, somewhere between every possible vendor under the sun and geez, there's only a few of you folks really competing, there's wonderful bliss. And for us, our goal is to get to that and figure out where are we going to get the best technology, the best service, the best price, and actually be able to execute it and move forward. So we, much like has been described prior, we have our own processes where if there's capabilities out there that EIS just can't quite fit, we do have processes where we can go through and say, actually, this capability is something we want outside of EIS. But the market research is what has to prove that. And from the vendor space, we have to be very clear about what that looks like and why it's not something we don't see already pre-competed.
Jeff, do you want to weigh in a little bit on kind of how NOAA is looking at kind of this, maybe not emerging technologies if we're talking about SD-WAN, but some other opportunities that you're using to kind of say, hey, here's where we want to be. Here's our roadmap to be better, faster, cheaper in the next, you know, 3, 5, 7 years?
Sure. I'll add some comments here, but SD-WAN isn't emerging at this point. You know, it is a good technology that gives us an opportunity to make the transition of technologies and provisioning easier. You know, that's kind of how I see it from an implementation perspective, right? You know, the dynamics of routing and across various technologies has been around for many, many years. NOAA's opportunity there, you know, is moving to implement items like that, technologies like that, to facilitate an easier transition, an easier management, lower cost of service at the site. You know, with 2,400 sites around the country, that's a significant cost and very difficult to manage. And if we can, you know, move services out to the edge, in some cases we can, in some cases it's, you know, much more challenging. And so that SD-WAN and those various types of technology and platforms that we put those services on at the edge will enable that. you know, and how that gets rolled into the final programmatic architectures, we're still working on that piece.
Steve, you want to jump in a little bit on how you're working with your folks within education about, okay, how do you bring in new or different or emerging technologies and what that looks like, you know, 3, 5, 7 years from now?
Yeah, so we have a very active relationship with our small business office and also our technology group in terms of the kind of the governance and the planning. For us, some of the big pieces that we're looking at is one, you know, how well does a vendor understand our mission and who we are and what we do, which should be pretty standard of fact. But the second piece is, for us, we're really looking at interoperability, because that's what the future is going to hold for us. And when we're looking at selection criteria or evaluation criteria for capabilities, it's only moving more towards, do y'all play well with others? Do y'all give us access to our data in its raw formats? And can we influence your capabilities through things like robotic process automation, which Ergo could be driven by AI in the future? And if the answers to those are no, we operate in a silo. You know, yeah, we've got AI and ML in our silo, and got your data in our silo, and we can do exports from our silo, but we're going to massage it a bit. That becomes very challenging for us because it doesn't align with our zero trust architecture. And so for folks thinking into the future about, you know, what does the business look like with the Department of Education, it's a very open data type of business. And you'll hear that echoed from our CDO as well, writ large across our space. But cybersecurity, it's one of our core tenets. If we can't get access to the data and leverage it in our data lake, it's almost a non-starter. Everything else would have to be so phenomenally wonderful that we just couldn't live without it.
Steve Hernandez is CISO for the Education Department. Jeff Flick is Director of the Enterprise Network Program Office at NOAA. They spoke to Federal News Network's Jason Miller at a recent ACT IACT event. That's going to do it for this week's episode. If you missed any portion, you can find it on our website. Head to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for July, sponsored by Hughes Networks on Federal News Network.
What is dedication?
My daughter started making necklaces. She makes what we call affirmation fashion. I tell her every day that your black is beautiful. Your black is beautiful. And if there's anything better than being beautiful, it's being smart. And if there's anything better than being smart, it's being kind. And reaffirming that every day is our method of making sure her chin never drops. My dad wasn't around. And I remember riding a bike and falling off and cutting myself, and me never would just want to get back on it. People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike, and you didn't. I didn't teach them. I just created an environment where they taught themselves, and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Mike Richmond of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. With this VA research nugget, many people with spinal cord injury are at risk for serious respiratory infections and pneumonia because they can't clear their lungs and airways. To address this problem, VA researchers developed a cough stimulator that's now in clinical use. Stimulators acting on nerves that control the respiratory muscles make more natural breathing possible for many patients with spinal cord injury. The technology reduces the rate of respiratory infections, improves quality of life, and slashes the cost of care for veterans and others with spinal cord injury. VA researchers continue trying to improve the technology. Advances could expand its use in veterans with spinal cord injury, as well as in others who have difficulty coughing, for example, because of strokes or ALS. To learn more about VA research, go to research.va.gov. That's research.va.gov. I'm Mike Richmond.